This first session is going to be presented by Miles Jackman, my colleague here, obscenity lawyer extraordinaire and currently legal director for the Open Rights Group. Miles is going to be talking about age verification and the Digital Economy Act, which is now an act, and what it means for you. Miles is going to explain what law means, how people can protect themselves, and how org is pushing back through various legal actions and campaigns.
Thanks, Phil. Morning, everyone. This is going to be very specifically about the Digital Economy Act, as Phil has said. You can see that I created this presentation a while ago and it says Digital Economy Bill. It is now in the last session of Parliament before the election. Been enacted and is indeed an act. We have, as Phil I'm sure will draw attention to, got a number of other campaigns and actions on, so challenges to the Investigatory Powers Act. We are lobbying very hard against the possibility of an Espionage Act and so on. But today I'm going to be talking very heavily about age verification from particularly a free speech, freedom of expression, privacy and security perspective. So I'd like to start, if I can work out how to use something that isn't a Mac, in 1976. So some of you may remember that the Sex Pistols appeared on Bill Grundy's television show about 5 o'clock in the afternoon and used a bunch of profanities which got them called The Filth and the Fury in the Daily Mirror and Foul-Mouthed Yobs. The thing that I really want to draw your attention to is the central picture, which is a report from The Sun at the time that one man was so offended by, I think it was Johnny Rotten calling Bill Grundy a filthy fucking fucker because he was leching over Susie Sue. He was so offended by this that he kicked his own television set, thereby self-censoring. Now, this is roughly what happened to me approximately 3 years ago. So, oh dear me, slides are playing up a bit, but don't worry, I'll talk you through them gently. So, there was an editorial in The Guardian on the 30th of May 2013 saying, internet pornography, never again. Now, it was kind of curious because I had been doing some very low-level writing for The Guardian about obscenity law, and this headline appeared online the day before the print edition came out, and it essentially said that all pornography was evil and damaging. Now, I called my editor, who was at the time the editor of the legal section of The Guardian, and like the guy who had kicked the television set at Bill Grundy, I pretty much punched my MacBook Air when I read the headline because it was so inflammatory. And what happened, as far as we can understand, is that a certain writer at The Guardian who has a perfectly legitimately very strong traditional rad-fem views on pornography had taken this headline and turned it into an editorial. I spoke to my editor and said, look, I think that this is very unbalanced and unfair. Obviously, this person is entirely entitled to hold her opinions, but you printed it as an editorial, as definitive, and therefore I think you ought to consider it. Now, knowing a few people who worked at The Guardian at the time, I understand they held a crisis meeting the next morning where they managed to change one or two words in that sentence to some pornography is evil and damaging. So it's a massive victory for free speech there. One word inserted. But this was really the point at which free speech and censorship came into conflict around the issue of pornography online. So the article itself suggests credit card authentication for porn sites. Now, it wasn't developed very heavily until 2015 when, as you may be able to see, I'm sorry if my slides are not playing so well today, there was a survey conducted by the NSPCC saying that pornography was a massive problem for 12 to 13-year-olds. Now, journalist Frankie Munn deconstructed the survey itself and discovered that the NSPCC had commissioned a online survey organisation described by Marketing Today, I think, as the kind of soft, self-authenticating surveys that discredit the survey and marketing industry entirely. So they had advertised in Mumsnet for parents to talk to their own children about what porn they consumed, whether they had seen it, whether they had not seen it, and how they felt about it. Now, as Professor Clarissa Smith from Sunderland University said, she would feel a bit uncomfortable if she had to answer questions about what porn she watched in front of her dad, and she's my age. So the ethics of getting children to talk about porn in front of their parents with a received opinion and how they would feel about it is a bit dubious. But these essentially two occurrences are the motor behind what has led to the Digital Economy Act passing. So, within days of this NSPCC survey, oh, by the way, I do not criticise the NSPCC as an organisation for doing so. I used to work very briefly for the NSPCC, but I do think that they have gone beyond their remit and that this actually massively discredits them and is something of a problem for them. So, the culture secretary at the time, Sajid Javid, suggested credit card as a means of age verification. Now, I would imagine that the majority of you will see the problems inherent in that solution from the problems with Operation OR and people simply just borrowing parents or stealing credit cards, that the credit card is not a strong means of identifying an individual is over the age of 18. Again, at that time, you could quite legitimately get a 14-year-old a second credit card on your adult account. So it's not the most strong form of authentication or age verification. And as I said, obviously the most easy way would be to beg, borrow, or steal an adult's credit card. Again, the dodgy data came out rather swiftly, the Marketing Today, but the ethics are the things that are most concerning. So next we have the... Oh dear, that one's really gone off. The point I'm making on that slide is quite simple. The Tory Party manifesto from 2015 had a single line in it, which starts, "We will stop children's exposure to harmful sexualized content in online pornography and music videos." So you see that the two are completely conflated in that situation, but also it's a single line. It's a throwaway act which has led to these sections of the Digital Economy Act. So skip to today. I'm sorry, how much of that's coming? Oh, that one's actually showing. That's amazing. I'm amazed that Windows and Macs are talking to each other so sensibly. It's quite unusual. Right, so the Digital Economy Bill and Extreme Pornography. What's interesting is that the original test for what would be behind age verification was non-conventional sexual acts. I am struggling to see what conventional sexual acts are, let alone which category would certain acts would fall in that were non-conventional. But eventually, and we see this as a very, very small token campaign victory, the phrase extreme pornographic material was substituted for non-conventional sexual acts. And the term extreme pornographic material comes from Section 63 of the Criminal Justice and Immigration Act 2008, which is the extreme pornography law. Now, that is a piece of legislation which has existed and been in general currency since about January 2009, which has led to things such as the tiger porn prosecution, which you may be familiar with, for the gentleman who was prosecuted for having a video of purportedly a woman having sex with a tiger, which turned out to be, in fact, a man wearing a tiger skin rug who turns to the camera and says that means advertising Frosties for a living. And, of course, he was then on the front page of the Daily Telegraph on New Year's Eve as a massive viral joke across the globe as a result of the CPS, i.e. the police's lawyers, incompetence and inability to understand the nature of the material. So we've had other prosecutions under this law, such as Simon Walsh's porn trial, which have shown that the law itself is not particularly well understood, putting it delicately, by those who are supposed to be enforcing it. So again, there will be interpretational issues around the grey areas of what extreme pornography might be. To cut to the to the chase, just to show you what can and can't be allowed, there are three tests that must be fulfilled for the image to be pornographic: extreme in nature, grossly offensive, disgusting, or otherwise of an obscene character. Again, all particularly subjective language. So the notion of disgust being entirely personal and individual and very difficult to actually port across on a specific level. And the image is explicit and realistic, which, given the tiger porn case, should never have come to court because it's clearly entirely unrealistic. Next, we have the type of material that is likely to be extreme pornography. Now, I have no problems with the final two categories being held as illegal on the basis that, as a settled act of law, both bestiality and necrophilia are clearly illegal because those are classes of people or things that cannot consent. What I find interesting is that those two things are then juxtaposed with the first two, A and B, which are activities which are potentially capable of being consented to by adults. So it's much like the old LGBTQ debate, where we would have people who were gay being accused of being paedophiles because, like, the two are obviously the same, right? So, again, slightly interestingly, in sentencing terms, C and D both carry a two-year prison sentence for images of things that are illegal to do, whereas categories A and B carry a three-year prison sentence for things that are legal to do. So, act which threatens a person's life may subjectively seem like a very logical thing to prohibit, but this, according to the debates in Hansard, was to prohibit types of material known as necrobabes material. We did a trial of this material in a Midlands Crown Court, and the gentleman in question had material from this site, Necrobabes, which actually turned out to be 1950s era style schlock horror. It was very influenced by Hammer horror films, etc. There was no way that anyone viewing this material could plausibly think it was in any way realistic. Nonetheless, he was prosecuted as a test case, and the jury returned not guilty verdicts, and he was acquitted. What was interesting, again, was in this case the utter incompetence of the Crown Prosecution Service and the police. They initially charged him with being in possession of about 1,250 extreme pornographic images, and of that, they had to drop over 900 because they were of fully clothed people doing nothing sexual whatsoever. So it was almost cosplay level, women in Wonder Woman costumes, not in any way engaging in sexual activity. So again, we see that whilst from an external perspective, the idea of age verification may seem very sensible, much like the idea of prosecuting people in possession of extreme pornography, the problems that come into play are around the actual execution thereof. Now, Where are we? Okay. So, how does age verification actually work? So, now that the bill has attained full legal status, what is going to happen? Well, one of the things that's interesting is that the BBSC, who have been approved effectively as the regulator for internet material, have an ability to endorse via the Secretary of State the age verification solution providers, all of which are third-party corporations. So if we roll back to the original perceived problem, viewing certain types of material, the state has then delegated responsibility for prevention of that to third-party corporate interests, one of which is a corporation called MindGeek, who own approximately 90% of the tube sites, as in the adult free content porn tube sites on the internet. Now, this is potentially a huge problem because, firstly, MindGeek have identified that they have not only a massive amount of back-end data on their users' interests and how they interact with different sites and content and types of content, but they will then provide their own age verification software, thus getting front-end details, which they claim will not identify the users individually, but is somewhat dubious in the reality thereof. Now, it doesn't take a genius to work out that the two can quite easily be scraped together, and therefore this corporation will have knowledge of individuals, what they choose to view, and possibly even very close marketing details. There is no prohibition in the legislation on this happening. There is no guaranteed body, independently or otherwise, to protect privacy. So the Ashley Madison-style hack that occurred some months ago, and many similar, where people's sexual proclivities in private are revealed in the public domain. There is nothing to prevent against that, and there is no body to ensure that this data is held securely either. I would also note that, for example, MindGeek have no experience whatsoever of data protection or cybersecurity. Yes, please. Sorry, just before you ask your question, I get bored of the sound of my own voice very quickly. So if anyone has questions, shut me up quickly, because I'm much more reactive that way. Please.
Quick question.
Sure.
Is there a requirement that personal data be kept in the UK or EU?
Now, that's a very interesting one. Because there's no requirements whatsoever, there is none specific. So
does that get inherited from EU law?
Now, the next problem is just to step forward a second. Our understanding is that MindGeek are going to apply the age verification requirement by UK law to their sites globally. So, just to explain for a second why that is so important, the BBFC have the power to block sites that don't comply. So, if a website that is accessible via UK ISP that's hosted in, say, Canada, if they refuse to provide age verification, they can be blocked by UK ISPs under the authority of the BBFC. Now, this becomes incredibly complicated in terms of interjurisdictional issues. So one would hope that, yes, European law and British data protection would apply in principle, but there is no specific duty on the providers to do so. Does that make sense?
A fudge.
Absolutely a fudge, without a shadow of a doubt. So, just to roll back what I was just explaining, So in practice, what is happening? Again, in the lobbying process, it became clear that MindGeek, who were not previously very popular within the adult industry ambit, for the simple reason that they would put up material owned by producers in violation of intellectual property rights, and therefore the amount of material produced online since 2006 has dwindled massively, down to 80 or 90% of what it had previously been. As a consequence, they are now popular because paid-for content providers think that age verification and blocking will stop free material on the internet. So the vast majority of porn industry producers are behind this. We just got a Freedom of Information request response saying that MindGeek had initially proposed to DCMS that 4.5 million websites globally be blocked, because that's how many they'd need to block. And of course, one can see that there is a clear interest for them to do so commercially. The reality is we are under the impression that the BBFC as the regulator are more likely to block about 100 of the biggest websites in terms of physical dominance on the internet. So X-Hamster, RedTube, YouTube, PornTube, etc. But what's really interesting for me is that the chilling effect that this is likely to have on perhaps minority sexual community interests, so BDSM, LGBTQ, etc., etc., that there will be areas of sexual interest which people can argue that there is not only a privacy and security impact, but also a freedom of expression impact. So, for the sake of argument, if I live in an isolated rural community, I don't have access to perhaps some of the more metropolitan delights of London in terms of sexual communities, the internet becomes a surrogate for me by way I can explore my sexual interests. And therefore, if certain things, sites dedicated to gay activities are likely to be hit, because the other problem with this is the cost of age verification. Pandora Blake, my colleague and friend who has campaigned on this, has said quite openly that she cannot afford to run her ethical spanking site with age verification in place, because the cost implication on her of running a site such as that is so extreme relative to the very small amount of money that she actually makes from it, that it will be impossible economically for her to be able to do so. So there is clearly a strong risk of a chilling effect on free speech. We've noticed this with another site. There's a site called FetLife, which is like the Facebook of fetish, and it has already responded to the digital economy bill, as it was then, by removing huge, great tranches of material. Now, the interesting thing is, reading between the lines and also talking to other members of the industry, it seems to be credit card processing companies who are enforcing this upon adult websites. So, again, you've got this chain that there is a government demand leading to legislation, but the actual form in which it takes is delegated to third-party corporate interests for the age verification itself, but further down the line, the credit card processing companies, much like I'm sure you're all aware of, say, PayPal's extreme avoidance of adult content, for no particularly good reasons apart from perceived morality. The same is happening with the credit card processing companies, that they are putting pressure on websites to remove certain activities that arbitrarily are considered to be, by them, risky. So it's really risk management in an area where risk, in fantasy terms, should be entirely acceptable in terms of free speech. Right, I notice I'm about 25 minutes in. I would much rather take questions particularly starting with this area, and then we can talk about other things too. So I've got two there. You first, please.
So in regards to Pandora's
yes.
point about costs,
yeah.
From what I've looked through in the bill,
yeah.
what is the definition of an age verifier? I mean, what's stopping me going to company's house tomorrow and going, hi, I made verification?
Yeah, no, they have to be accepted by the Secretary of State and BBFC, but there's nothing to stop you. Now, what I haven't talked about in much detail is the types of age verification that are available. So from a privacy perspective, which I'm sure is something that most of the people in this room are really interested in, they are privacy nightmares in many cases. My particular favourite is the one that scrapes your Facebook in order to check to see, for the sake of argument, whether you've been to any 21st birthday parties recently, so it can guess how old you are. Now, I mean, all of that private data being accessed that way. Also, by their own word, MindGeek are expecting 20 to 25 million sign-ups to their own age verification solution within the first month of it being rolled out. So it's clearly a massive, massive demand issue. Obviously, the next problem is that there is the possibility that it will make people more literate in use of VPN, proxy, Tor, etc. To obviate this, even I think Earl Errol said that they thought that at best it would have a 70% effectiveness. So there are huge problems around this, both in what an age verification solution provider is and also how it will operate. There was a question over there, I think?
Yeah, it is.
Sure.
I was kind of wondering in terms of the types of age verification, like you mentioned MindGeek, I think it was.
Yeah.
So, as I understand, as the likelihood to implement this for most of the sites, I'm just wondering why isn't there any sort of lower cost options for the sites like Pandora's or anything else?
The problem is the MindGeek one is the cheapest option. So we went to a demo of about 7 or 8 different solutions providers some months ago. Amusingly, it was an adult industry one, so they thought it was entirely appropriate to hold this tech demo in a strip club. But there you go. They vary. There's some which involve taking selfies, and then it verifies you based on that information. There is one called Yoti, which from memory was the most effective in terms of privacy, but the cost implication is on the site to pay for the age verification. So the user is not paying. The site that is visited, there is a token system. So say you sign up to the MindGeek one and then you go onto Pandora's site, Pandora has to pay MindGeek to let traffic onto her site. Now, there are clearly economic arguments as to how this operates, but she provides a pretty much a community site which talks about the ethics of her and other people's sexual practices and how she makes ethical pornography and so on. What we are concerned with is that type of site, which is really, as the Ofcom even agreed that she was a community site, these communities are likely to atrophy, whereas the sites that are just porn, without much greater context, will just be successful in terms of survival of the biggest, if that makes sense. Well, this is one of the things that we're working on at the moment. The industry created a rather nebulous concept, PAS 1268 or something equivalent to that, which sounded very effective till you realised that it had no real serious weight behind it in terms of privacy and security. So there may be challenges to the BBFC and DCMS as to how data is held securely, etc., etc. But what's interesting to me is that If MindGeek are going to do this globally, although the requirement is currently only on UK, what impact will that have on the ecosystem as a whole? And particularly, I've always argued that the porn industry has always been ahead of other media industries, inevitably. So the move to live performance that the adult industry has had is echoed very slowly with the record industry, which is about 10 years behind. So porn has always been very clever in working out what people want and how to give it to them. How will this impact on freedom of expression as a whole and net neutrality? Sorry, you just asked one, so there's a question here. Thank you, though.
So what is your position on the access or prevention of access of children to pornography? Is it that that's a liberties issue for the children and the parents just need to get over it? Or is it that any restriction should be implemented by the parents at the end point?
Well, the problem is, it seems to me that, being realistic, access to material is a huge societal concern, right? And we are currently really learning, much like with social media, how to talk about these things. So, to take your question, we tend to talk about the hypothetical children and then ignore the reality of the research. So, most of the credible research suggests that children under pubertal age have no interest in access whatsoever, which is why that NSPCC survey is so disproportionate. So, peer-appropriate activity is an interesting area, but likewise, how do we prohibit a thing which is legal to those that we may not want to see it? I don't think there is any simple answer, but yes, I would agree that we do need more parental responsibility. It seems like a lot of parents think, oh, the government have imposed a technological solution which allows me to relax and not check my child's mobile devices, for example. And that seems to obviate the need for parental responsibility discourse. As I said in one article, really what we need to do is talk sensibly to younger people about these issues. And I find it interestingly contradictory that under David Cameron, where this first came out, he refused to vote in support of teaching younger women about the value of consent in school. So you've got this incredibly contradictory, porn is bad type, we need to put it behind age verification, but we're not going to teach younger women about the value of sexual autonomy, consent, agency, etc. Which is an incredibly contradictory message, in my opinion. So I think we need a much more open and honest debate about the nature and role of pornography in society and the way it's consumed. So you could arguably say, should erotica be consumed on the tube? Should adult material be consumed on the tube? Do you see what I mean? I'm getting a strong no from your eyes, but never mind. Next question, please.
There's the one at the back.
I think without, that's not my area of particular expertise, but without a doubt that makes perfect sense.
Could you repeat the last question?
We have a site called Blocked, which collates which actual sites are physically blocked for things like whether it could be sexual content because it's the Essex Girl Guides Forum, through to sites that are blocked for esoteric material. And we're trying to create as much as possible a list of which sites are blocked. No? Okay. Gentlemen at the back.
Okay. BBFC.
British Board of Film Classification. So again, the people who put a 12 to 18 sticker on the film that you go and see, slightly curious that the film censor has been ported over to the internet. Yeah. Right, we get into it.
I'm just wondering, if it is, I mean, clearly there's a massive demand there.
You might think so. put it this way. We are, again, what I was saying to the gentleman there, there is clearly a discussion to be had that we as a society are avoiding about the nature of the differences and relationships between pornography, art, erotica, and so on. So trying to work out where my nearest gallery that I can see a naked picture is from here, but I think there's two down there and one over there. Quite easily take children around that. That may be deemed appropriate, but, you know, a child can buy a newspaper such as The Sun and see topless images in there, so on and so forth. I think the problem is that the internet has democratized access to materials that would have previously been in what we call the secret library. In other words, I think a lot of this moral panic is classist. So it's saying that previously the British Library and Museum have essentially locked rooms where they keep all the good stuff. And people such as myself, if I could show my research credentials, would be allowed into them. But the internet blows that wide open, and now anyone can access that kind of material, should they choose to. Sorry.
My question is, it legal?
No, there's no prohibition on viewing.
So if a teenager looks at pictures of naked people on the internet, that's not illegal?
Presuming that they are over the age of 18.
So a teenager, like, 14, 15...
Well, then that's an indecent image, so... No. So the question is the age of the person in the image. So if the person in the image...
That's not the
image
over 18.
Oh, then...
Teenager looks at...
Yeah, that's fine.
Is that legal?
No, there's no criminal offence committed there. Yeah, well, Facebook's an odd one around nipples because they don't like no female nipples. Male nipples are fine, and trans nipples, they really have
so
no
this
idea.
This chap's trying to... I think there's a simple question here. Is it illegal for a child, a teenager, to look at naked people? I think what Miles has said is no.
Yeah? There's,
there are all sorts of complexities about that answer, but I think it's basically quite no. Yeah? So, given that we've got about a quarter of an hour left in this session,
yeah,
maybe we could, because you're talking about the Digital Economy Act, and there are many, many aspects to it, I think, you know, there may be possibly questions, so not necessarily to take it off this topic, but if there are broader questions around the Digital Economy Act, I urge you to ask, you know, Miles, who's a legal expert, and I have some interest and concerns around it too. So.
Gentleman at the back there, I think. Yeah, please.
Does it apply to images only or text?
No, it's everything, even sound, I think. So, again, when we're getting into the interesting area of text, erotic fiction sites, so slash fiction, fan fiction, etc., which is a very curious area. Because the written word had previously been considered pretty much sacrosanct because it must be a fantasy and therefore not a tangible reality, is now back on the agenda as something which can be criminalised or just age verified. I think there's a question. Yeah.
Yeah. Surely the GDPR and the current data protection will apply to any data that they collect.
No, well, there's my point was that, yes, that's correct. My point was that there's no regulator of the age verifiers themselves, the solution providers, to ensure that they're up to snuff in the first place. And that, to me, is very, very concerning.
So if they're collecting data for age verification and using it for something else...
Quite. Yeah, but again, the jurisdictional issues, as I was trying to explain with MindGeek, if it's global, there are some complicated issues of where and what and why. So if it's a non-GDPR compliant... Sorry?
GDPR is supposed to solve those from data protection, but we'll only see that when it
Yeah, sure, Phil, please.
So you're right, and this is a generic problem that we face in the UK out of the Digital Economy Act and looking towards the GDPR. While GDPR is intended to fix a lot of things with the Digital Economy Act, taking some data from someone and then using it for purposes that were not specified at the time of the data being given, are precisely what the government has enabled with Section 35 of the Digital Economy Act. So while the Digital Economy Act next May, I think the Information Commissioner says they're going to start enforcing on it, there are between now and then the possibility of our country derogating from certain aspects of the GDPR. And, as I say, an act has just been passed which does precisely what you're talking in a government context, not in a porn company context. But, I'm very much of the opinion, and I don't know if people share it, that, if you're going to try to encourage people in good behaviour or positive behaviour, then it generally tends to help if you model the appropriate behaviour and they're doing the exact opposite.
How are we doing for time?
We're fine. We've got more time for more questions.
Okay. Yes, please.
You just mentioned about text being covered.
Yes.
Do you know if there are any sort of active plans to impose a verification on, say, video?
I know, right. I mean, this is... It's a complicated one because text has come back on the agenda as in being prosecutable for writing and distributing it in the last few years. So it's clearly on the radar. Our problem is we don't have any clarity at this moment as to what types of site are going to be targeted for age verification and therefore sent notices asking them to comply with it and then can be blocked if they fail to comply. But it wouldn't surprise me. That's the best answer I can give. Please, sir.
I don't want to take off your main topic, but you raised the possibility of an espionage act.
Yeah.
So can you just touch on it for us, please?
Short version, the desire to create a updated Official Secrets Act. This has been punted to the Law Commission, who are trying to put this as neutrally as possible, an organisation who usually tidy up the law for administrative purposes. So, for the sake of argument, the law of assault may be outdated in certain regards. They will, as academics essentially, look at how best to improve the law and then create suggestions. What we have found particularly interesting is that this process has arguably been subvertive by the Law Commission having drafted a document about a possible update to the Official Secrets Act. It's not known as the Espionage Act per se, it's just that's the sort of hashtag version that has got into common parlance. But it's very concerning to see their document, which as a whole does not mention once Snowden, for example. So it seems to be highly partisan in that it talks about the benefits of surveillance, none of the detriments. And as Org have repeatedly said to them, this is clearly not in any way compatible with their role. And to deny the existence of some of these things is actually counterintuitive. Yes, please.
So on Thursday, Pandora launched a Tumblr blog.
Yes.
And she and I and Neil Brown were discussing
who's
responsible for the publishing and things like that. So it sort of petered out. Neither of us could work out who was liable. Now, my understanding is that Tumblr, Facebook, genericservice.com are the ASP. They are not liable for any of the publishing, the fines, the takedowns. Is the person that creates the Tumblr blog and then publishes images.
Okay, it's really complicated. So, good question. Thanks. Going out on a bang here. So, first of all, Pandora is liable because she published it, right? Now, in criminal liability, it's arguable that Tumblr could be held liable, but it is difficult to substantiate that. It's just a possibility. As with this area, my whole thing about obscenity law is it's so grey. It's not clear and transparent. And the fact that there have been questions about slash fiction and Pandora's site, it's very difficult for citizens to know their rights, to know where the law stands. And that's an example of bad law. If it's not clear, then it needs to be improved. But yes, we can talk about that in the bar afterwards because it's so complicated.
And this is a good point. I have one last question. But so there's the next session begins here at 11:40, I guess, around the building. We'll have one more question for this gentleman. Thank you for your questions during the session. But just so that you know, you'll have 5 minutes to sort of get between places.
If it's going to be illegal to publish smutty stories on the internet, should W.H. Smith ask for age verification if I go and buy Shades of Grey?
It's interesting that you mentioned Smiths, because just as an aside, they used to sell child pornography up to the early 90s. Now, a slightly dubious one. I see my comms manager's jaws just hit the floor. Just like, oh, fuck, he's going to get sued. There was a magazine called Health and Efficiency, which was supposedly a naturist magazine. But because the law applies, as we were discussing earlier, to persons under the age of 18, it would show nudist families, presumably in innocuous poses, etc. But it was viewed by paedophiles as a legitimate way of which to access things. Now, this comes from a case where a person who was charged with the material said, look, I bought it in W.H. Smith's. How was I to know? And the judge threw it out. But yes, the same is true, that it's odd with, say, 50 Shades, which has one incontrovertibly obscene thing in it. They never do it, of course, because it's a bit too tame. But they talk about fisting, but never do it. But the mere word fisting is enough to make it obscene, which would mean that, yes, Smiths could be prosecuted for selling it.
You look at Nymphomaniac as well, like that film.
The only thing about Nymphomaniac is, and again, this is a quiddity, it's passed by the BBFC. So if the BBFC say something is acceptable, then that's fine. But there you go. So from Digital Economy Bill to fisting and nymphomania, I love the smell of porn in the morning. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.